So then the men would return in. It would take a while to go from one farm to the other because this was a slow-moving thing. But anyway, it wasn't really more than about 45 minutes, an hour. It all depended on how close your neighbors were. Now we'd get... by that time, Dad would have purchased or had to go to the butcher shop and get all this, oh, possibly 35, 40 pounds of meat or
beef. Did you have to pay them in addition to feeding them?
No. Oh, yes. Yes, you had to pay them for doing the work. And they, in turn, paid the men that worked for them. But it was nice if you had sons and if you had neighbors help each other out, then they'd come and return the favor.
I see.
That saved a lot of money. Those days, money was very hard to get, come by, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't any easier than now because it just wasn't that much money around, but you helped each other out, and the ladies would come, too. Of course, if you had daughters at home, well, then there was enough women folk there.
Yeah.
My sister was 3 years older, and she was supposed to be doing the cooking, my mother, but I do the little extra things, you know, like, set the table and wash dishes. I was good for that because my mother and my sister could take care of the other little cakes to bake. And
did your mother have to do pretty much all the chores on the farm on her own when your father went off to?
Not too much. By that time, there were older children, older boys, and older girls. Now, I remember my sister saying that she'd do the milking. Mother would stay in the house, and for a while my sister was home because her husband was a fisherman, commercial fisherman. And those days, they used to go like for the week, come back for the weekend. Mm. So my sister practically raised her family with my mother and dad. And that way, that made that many more people, you see.
Yeah.
There was high 16 of us then. That's a lot of cooking. And my sister would do the chores, and my mother would stay in the house and take care of the children. Now, it was nothing unusual to change somebody else's baby or feed it, you know.
Did that happen often, where a daughter would come back and live with the family for
no,
a period of time?
No, not really. No, I don't know just how that happened. I guess they hadn't established a home.
Yeah.
After that, they moved into Green Bay, but for a long time, they lived that way.
What was your sister's husband's name who did the fishing?
Joseph Fabry. Fabry. Possibly known as Fabry, but it really is. So I guess he fished with his dad and his brothers. Mm. And of course, well, I say at that time, this is many years ago, I'm going to be 62, and I possibly was not even 5, because we moved from the farm in Rosier when I was 5. So,
did your sister's children then take up fishing too? Or
no,
they didn't?
No. One of her sons has a factory, glove factory here in town. Very, very good businessman. He's expands, you know. He's got gloves, I guess, just about all over the world. Fancy gloves for skiing and any kind of a special glove.
Yeah.
They have plants, I guess, in Marinette, and they've got a plant. I don't know if it's New Hampshire, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, so they are required to go out of town a lot because, you know, they've got this. Well, yeah, and he started that business right at home in town here. In his mother and dad's basement.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I say, I mean, I guess children are working hard now, but I guess years ago, you had to be a really dedicated and hard-working person to establish a business like that. And his brother helped him. So one of his brothers is helping him at this time.
What are their names?
Edmund and Walter, maybe. Fabry. And, there's so many angles to that. Can you cut the this is all hide. This is all leather things. Yeah. Maybe by now they do some nylon and things like that. You know, because you have to. It's a competitive world, and you have to stay in with all the materials that are being put up. But you can bring in your deer hides, and they turn out gloves, and you can, you know, get the finished product. So
I wanted to ask you what sorts of things your mother did when you kids got sick. What sort of cures did she have? Oh. How did she take care of you?
Well, I don't know if I should name the liniment. There was this liniment that the good old Watkins, and I guess Raleigh's too. If I'm not mistaken, they call it King of Pain. They established that name because it was a painkiller, really. Mm. It did the trick. They'd take a few drops of this, put it on a spoon with a little sugar, and put it in some warm or hot water. If you had a stomach ache, that did it.
Is that really the stuff that said for external use only?
Right. Never heard that it killed anyone, but I would hesitate to do that now because I think we're more conscious of the fact that there are things sometimes that, you know, we're not supposed to take internally. I would probably heed them. Although I did have a customer, I can't name her name, that was looking for this product, and she said, they don't make this anymore, do they? And I said, they sure do. I said, smells the same and everything. And she was delighted because she took this bottle, and it really was the thing. Yeah. It did the thing. And I told her about the, you know, the word external on there. But she said, never killed us before. A few drops won't hurt. And it did the trick. I guess that's the only home remedies that you could have. I mean, you didn't run to no doctor unless you really had a need for it. But doctors were kind of far. I can remember when I had a snake bite. I was on one of these lawn swings. They have them now, you know. Yeah. And it was crowded. The kids were all on the seat, so I was down below kneeling, and I got a sharp pain. And, oh, the kids hollered, you know, the bigger ones. Oh, you've got a snake bite. So a creek ran in the house, and my dad hitched up the horse. And I don't know just how far we had to go, but we went to the doctor. I had a great big swollen knee, and I was scared. I don't know. I think I was about 8. And evidently, he did all right, because I'm still here.
What kind of snake was it, or don't you know?
Don't know. I can recall. It might have been a small garter snake.
What,
I don't know if they
what
would
did
be
the painful. Doctor do for it?
Well, I guess he put some stuff on. He possibly withdrew whatever the poison would be in there. That isn't very plain to me now. I knew that I had a swollen knee.
Yeah.
And the folks were very worried, you know, that I wouldn't have something that they couldn't help me with, but it was quite a distance before you get your horse. Your mother surely wasn't ready to take off. What she did, she got ready in a hurry, and I got a trip to the doctor. Well, and they kind of pampered me a little, you know how the older kids will.
What was the
doctor's
name?
That was the sick
name?
One. Dr. Kersher. Out there, around Lincoln, so I can't never remember that place. There's a place named similar in Erin, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's Erin.
How long did you stay at the doctor's then? Was it an overnight stay or just
no,
a few hours?
No, he treated me and we went back home. Hmm. I think he cut it and squeezed this out. I think this is what he did. Hmm. I think he cut it and, you know, squeezed whatever he thought was. By that time, it could have been in my bloodstream. Maybe I had good blood. I don't know. But I can't remember the distance. It was several miles. Mm. I mean, you know, it was a delay of, I'm sure, half an hour.
Yeah.
For sure. Maybe more, 45 minutes maybe. Because heck, we didn't have, I don't recall that we had that fast of going horses either. Oh, imagine you applied the whip a little, you know, get going, because, as I say, snake bites weren't anything to fool around with.
Really? What sort of medicine did your mother use for cuts and that sort of thing?
Oh, carbolic acid. It was a mixture. It was a white substance, and Dad would put that on. He'd be the one that would apply these things, and it would kind of bubble. I was supposed to, I just say, when you put an anesthetic on, you know, kind of,
yeah,
it just takes the
dirt.
Well, right, it cleanses it.
Right.
And it, when it stopped bubbling, well, that was all right.
Oh, was this a medicine you bought from the Watkins man or something? Or?
Well, I guess you could possibly. They handled it at that time, either Watkins or Raleigh's. A drugstore, imagine, would have carried it too. When we go into the bigger city, you know, get some supplies. But I recall that I had cut my finger on a sickle, and I was cutting away. It was towards, it was getting kind of dust, and I was going to finish. It was on a Saturday night. And
what were you cutting?
Weeds around a post.
Oh.
And I had a little sickle, and I was cutting down below, and the top of the sickle was cutting my finger. So by the time I look, here, I've got the scar. I never had a stitch in there, but when the weather changes, I sure have, a nice little ache there. But and I was 14 years old. And so I said, oh my gosh, cut my finger. Well, came, the old sickle was a little rusty, came in, and Dad put some of this carbolic acid liquid. And I slept that night with my hand on a pillow so I wouldn't bend my finger, because I think I could see the nerve in there. There, I swear, there was a little white thing sticking there. Nobody said anything about the doctor. So it was, no, I'd be racing to the doctor if I had to walk. You know, but I recall going to bed and my hand was flat on the pillow so that it wouldn't, so it would heal at least straight. Never got a stitch in it or nothing. Evidently, whatever that carbolic acid did, it sure did it good. Yeah, it sterilized it. That's the word I wanted.
Yeah,
it sterilized it good. As far as the chores that a Belgian woman would have been expected to do, she worked alongside of her husband. If there was field work to do and there wasn't any older children to do it, they worked right out. I've known cases where they took their babies right out in the field and, made a little bed out of maybe a couple of the shocks, put a blanket over it, and that's, they had to feed their baby, and it was sometimes too far to go back to the house, or else you didn't leave a small baby there and go, you know. So that's the way children were really. Sometimes you'd be shocking, and then you'd see a little brown mouse crawling right out. You know, they'd be underneath the the shocks. It was a rough life.
Yeah.
It was a rough life. Well, they really, when the Belgians settled in this part of the country, they really blazed the trail, I would say. A lot of places where it was just wilderness, you know, just woods, more woods. And they just cleared a patch, and that's where we'll build our home. And the neighbors would come around and help.
I remember you told me before about your mother and father and your feelings toward them and the different reasons why you were obeying them. Could you?
Oh, my dad was very stern. I know that he must have loved us, and underneath it was just that he was not at home that much. And when he'd come home, it seemed that his word was law. So if we disobeyed, we obeyed because we were afraid of him. We obeyed my mother because we loved her that much. We would never have thought of disobeying her. But I think we obeyed our dad more because of the fear. And that's possibly, that was in a lot of households, you know. The father was the head of the house, definitely. And his word was law.
You also told me something that your mother used to say to your sister and you when you were mean to her.
Oh, she'd say, "You'll come back from the dance," which meant a dance was supposed to be a place that you went for pleasure, you know? Yeah. It was a good time. Well, she'd mean that the good times will end. You're going to have a reverse of that. Oh. You'll come back from the dance, you know? That's when she was really perturbed with us and disgusted. And if we didn't toe the mark well, someday we were going to be sorry. It was more of a threat. But I shall never forget that, because it was, to this day, I can see the meaning of it. At that time, I thought, yeah, I'll dance. I never wasn't much of a dancer. I never cared for dances. I really learned after, because my husband is a very good dancer. And he liked dances. But of course, I had to go with him. If I wanted to be with him, I had to go to dances. I preferred to go to a show. You see, I was a very mousy type of person at first, and shows were fine entertaining. A dance would mean to get out amongst people.
Yeah.
And that was not, as I say, I was very bashful.
You think you were shy?
Shy,
because
yes.
Because you grew up on a farm or right away from people?
I think because I made these constant moves and I was starting over, you know, like getting acquainted with the teacher and getting acquainted with the children. And of course, when I first started, I didn't know a word in English. And I had learned the hard way. We had several teachers that knew how to speak Belgian too, but they didn't want us to speak Belgian in school.
Oh, what was it like on your first day of school?
Oh, it must have been terrible. Couldn't say too many words. I don't recall if I knew any words in English. Mm. The folks always spoke Belgian at home.
Mm. So, did you ever have a real hard time at school? I mean,
yes, I did. Yes, I had to master the English language.
Mm. Weren't most of the other kids in the same boat as you, though, so that you all had to do it? Or?
My brother would be 68 now. So he was 6 years older. Possibly most of the older children stayed home to do chores.
What about your classmates? Did all of them speak only one?
Some of them were in no better shape than I was. But you see, I was in the first grade. I was starting. And the others were possibly in an older grade, and they had already mastered the first barrier, you know, a few words. Where I was, and being very shy, I wasn't what you call an outgoing person, you know. I would possibly stay back and not even open my mouth for fear I would say the wrong thing. My mother never learned to speak too much English. Some of the words she knew, and then we'd say, "Well, why don't you just talk?" Well, no, because she said, "They'll think I know how to speak it, and then they'll keep on talking, and I won't be able to answer." So that was her. But she spoke very little. Of course, she understood a lot.
I see.
Because most of the children married different nationalities. Hmm. Some married Belgian, but then, well, they knew how to speak English, too. And we often wondered how she hadn't learned more English words, but like I say, she said, "No, I'll get stuck. They'll think I know how to speak it." And
what was it like to be in Kewanee, going to school among all? Well, there weren't that many Belgians in Kewanee, were there?
No, and what I was older than the rest of the kids.
Oh.
I would say, well, I was going to be 16 years old and starting the 8th grade, and I thought, oh my gosh, my mother was very ill. Well, 16 years old, at that time you didn't have to go to school anymore.
Yeah.
So why not quit? I mean, you're embarrassed. You don't, you're not very anxious to go.
Hmm.
And so 8th grade was more or less a repetitious, you know. The 7th grade was supposed to be the hard one. The 8th grade was supposed to be more or less of a review, like. So I never got my 8th grade diploma. Which I wish I had, because now I could take courses, you know. Possibly, but I don't know. It's pretty hard to. I don't drive a car. It would be pretty hard to go to school and pick up subjects. girlfriend's been toying with the idea. Senior citizens, we should go go to school.
Yeah, you can do that out at the university, too.
Yeah, I did get a kick, though. After 40-some years, I was, I had a CCD class for a while, but I had eighth graders, and they're a little bit, I think a little bit too much for me. I should have had younger children. We had quite a few boys that weren't really too anxious to learn too much. But I did go, hopefully, that I would better myself. I went to St. Albert College, where they had a course. And it wasn't for credits, but it was a course on CCD. It helped me. And
what is CCD?
Is religion. So it's like going to catechism. Years ago, we used to call it catechism. And your high school children go back to school like that, too, and pick up more religion. Mm-hmm. And it really gave me a very wonderful feeling to think that here, 40 years later, I'm going to St. Norbert College, you know, for this class. It really was very good for my ego. It was. It was a beautiful time of the year in fall. They had a lot of pretty trees out there, a lot of nice leaves, gathered leaves, and it was a very nice thing that I could do.
When you were in Kewanee, did any of the other kids give you trouble because you were Belgian?
Yes, community? Yes. I think that was always a little bit in the background, a little bit. I felt almost inferior. Inferiority complex is what I really had. And I have a brother that still says, why, when we're a different nationality? And I keep on telling him, well, God chose it this way, and what's wrong with the Belgians anyhow? The majority of them are very friendly and good-hearted, and they'll never let you get hungry. Their way of showing hospitality would be make lunch. And those lunches consisted of a meal, I tell you. It would be meat and, you know, bread and butter and homemade cottage cheese and trip. It was a good meal. Belgian pie, what more do you want? I mean,
how do you feel about Belgian jokes when you hear them?
Well, I've acquired a pretty good sense of humor along the way. I married a fellow that really, nothing perturbs them. They grew up, they also had, there were 12 in his family, and they were a very happy-go-lucky type of people. And I guess the Bohemians are known to be very friendly, and, you know, it doesn't worry and stew about things like I do, and I'm glad about that. Two of us in the family would be pretty much. But I don't know, it's... good way to be, I guess. I don't know.
So you've gotten pretty used to the Belgian jokes, even if your brother has.
Right, right. I never really felt that bad about it, but I always wondered why they were putting us down, really.
Yeah.
I am very glad to have this opportunity because I think the Belgians contributed very much to the beginning of some of these villages, little towns. And after reviewing this book especially, I'm certainly happy that I had this feeling because I would go along with the authors of this book very much. We all contributed, and I think all your nationalities do.
Sure.
We are all good for something, you know, to add our little bit.
People
make this world a little better.
Don't even know you're Belgian anymore unless you tell them because you've got a Bohemian name now.
Yes. I think along the way I sense this, that if I tried to talk a little bit better than the Belgian, you know, a little bit, that I might not be, well, what do you call that? Not branded, but, you know, there's a Belgian. Because a lot of Belgians, they just open their mouth and they give themselves away. Hmm. It's there. Well, I have a bad habit of saying, you know, that's one of the things, but it's not necessarily a Belgian slang. It's but I have tried to avoid that. I've tried to just better myself a little bit so they don't.
Did you have to work hard at that, or did it?
No, just come, not really. When I did go to school, I think I absorbed the better part of what I was supposed to learn, because I was a patient in St. Vincent for some time, and there were some very educated, well-educated people there, and we used to talk about different things, and I said, I would like to take up a course at the vocational school. We had the old vocational school. And they said, I would take up English. I would like to speak better. And they said, you don't have to do that. You speak very well. You don't have to feel that you should. And so I kind of got away from, because I realized that I must be quite a bit older. I would be quite a bit older than anybody that would be taking all these lessons. And, well, I may feel a little ridiculous, you know. You hate to make such a move. So I decided against it. Although we've been toying with this idea now, my girlfriend and I, that we could really go to school and pick up a few little things. It would be nice. It certainly is a wonderful thing that they're doing for the senior citizens that.
Let me see. I wanted to get back to some of the work on the farm. When you were a child, what sort of work did you have to do? Chores or special jobs?
Oh, I guess they really spoiled me for a while, you know. I really was only eight. We moved on the farm when I was seven. I was born on the farm, but up till the age of five, you don't do very much.
Yeah.
Well, and then when we acquired this farm in Casco, I was seven, and I think I was about nine when we moved. About 2 years is about as long as we ever stayed anywhere. We moved on. And I recall that I had a little dog. Raised him. Yeah, you know, they left me have a puppy.
What
in
kind
our,
was it?
Oh, it must have been a shepherd dog. Huh. Farm dog, you know. And I raised it in a little thing, and we had him in a granary. In a, kind of a trough thing, like, so he couldn't crawl out. Mother would say, your dog is up. He's awake. I can hear him. Get him and feed him some. I tried out there. Oh, milk. I'd go in the barn and they were milking, and I'd get a little milk and bring it to him. And he would eat too much. He was such a little fatty, roly poly. He just rolled. He must have had a tummy. So I raised him to he was a big dog, shepherd dog, you know, to help on the farm.
Yeah.
That's the only one I recall, but I can see where children would want a pet. Mm-hmm. I think it does something for them. It was very nice for me, although I never allowed mine to have one, because when they were at that age, we were living upstairs, and it was very difficult. And also, sharing the house with different families, you know, an apartment house converted. And, well, I didn't think it was right. And especially a young dog. I know my son got a dog when he was little. And he was so happy. He came home and here he had a dog. And I thought, now what? These are going to be problems. And I didn't have the heart to discourage him. Right then and there, they gave the dog a bath. He got a tub. It was in the middle of summer. Got a tub outside and washed the dog, wrapped him up in some old blanket, and they really had a ball. And then that night, we thought, well, we'll give you a chance, see what happens. We lived upstairs, and we put the dog in the garage, but he whined all night, because little dogs do that, you know. And Dad says, that won't do. The neighbors are going to complain. The renters won't like it. Might as well get rid of it before you get too attached to it. So we decided we'd go out on the farm to take it to my sister's. they could always use a dog on the farm. They thought was all right. So there was the end of that pet. But had we lived downstairs, possibly it would have been a different story. But from upstairs, I mean, you know, you can't tend to.